we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. It's Murder at Midnight with The Ace of Death, and a real treat going back to 1932, the World Adventurers Club with The Living Mummy. But first, let's enjoy some laughter with Lum and Abner. The old Jot 'em Down store first opened for business in April of 1931. By July of that year, Lum and Abner had moved to Chicago as a summer replacement for the NBC variety program Gene and Glenn. The show switched to CBS for Postum in 1938, continuing three times a week until 1940, when the stars dropped out of radio for a year to make movies. In 41, Lum and Abner returned as a four-day-a-week feature for Alka-Seltzer, continuing in that format on ABC until 1947. The final run of the 15-minute programs began on ABC in the early 1950s. Lum and Abner broadcast their final show on May 15th of 1953. Here now, from sometime in the 1930s, is episode number 62, The Boxing Promoter. Lum and Abner, another classic show from the golden age of radio on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler, I sent those shivers up our spines, Uncle Don. Wish that he was on Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Granny's Abner, I believe that's our ring.
I know it, Lum. I believe you're right.
I'll see. Hello, Jot 'em Down store. This is Lum and Abner.
And now, let's see what's going on down in Pine Ridge. Well, a carnival's on its way to Pine Ridge, and one of its features is a fighter named Iron Ike, who'll meet all comers, and who's offered $1,000 to anyone who could knock him out. And realizing that little, frail-looking Mouse Gray actually packs a terrific punch, Lum has been trying to talk Mousy into meeting Iron Ike, but so far his efforts have been to no avail. Today, as we look in on the little community, we find Abner in the Jot 'em Down store, and Lum has just returned from another conference with Mousy. Listen.
Any luck this time, Lum?
No luck. Granny, that Mousy Gray's not only the toughest one feller in this town, he's the spurnest one, too.
Well, won't he fight Iron Ike?
No.
Well, why won't he?
Because he ain't mad at him. That's what he keeps saying. He says he can't see no reason for fighting a feller he ain't mad at.
Well?
Granny, I argued with him for an hour trying to explain that a box fight's different from getting mad and fighting, but he can't see it that way.
Well, did you tell him about the money? The $1,000 that Iron Ike says he'll give to any feller that knocks him out?
Yeah, but even that never done no good.
You mean Mousy don't want no $1,000?
Oh, he'd like to have that all right. Said he'd like to buy Gussie a lot of stuff with the money, but he ain't mad and he won't fight.
Well, I'll be dead blamed.
Granny, he'd have been a sensation, too. A overnight sensation. There'd be great big headlines in all the big newspapers. Sensation knockout by Lometer's protege.
Protege?
Yeah, it means Mousy is sort of my discovery.
Oh.
See, I was going to be his manager and boxing promoter and take him to New York and all such as that. Now, all that's lost just because Mousy won't get mad at a feller.
Well, why don't we just get Mousy mad at him then?
Huh?
That's what we can do, Lum. Tell Mousy something that'll make him hate and despise Iron Ike.
Well, what are you going to tell him, though?
Why? Well, don't you recollect how Mousy got mad at you that time he come over and knocked you down?
Well, that was on account of he thought I'd give Gussie a locket for a present.
Well, sure, that's what we can tell Mousy that Iron Ike's fixing to do now.
Wait a minute. Now, Granny Zebner, that's the best one-out you ever had.
Yeah.
Yeah, get Mousy on the phone right away.
Well, here, I don't want to get mixed up.
Hurry up, we ain't got many days left to get Mousy in training for the fight. Go on, ring him up.
Well, all right, I'll try.
Make it sound like it was some gossip you just happened to overhear.
Gossip, huh?
Yeah. Tell him Arnike admires Gussie. That ought to make him mad enough.
Yeah, well, now, we don't want to get him too mad, Nom. Don't forget that mean temper he's got.
Yeah, that's right. Well, don't make it too strong.
No, wait a minute. Hello? Is that you, Mousy? Well, this is Abner Peabody. Oh, tolerably well, I reckon. Listen, Mousy, I just happened to overhear some gossip about Iron Eye.
Tell him he admires Gussie.
Yeah, he admires Gussie. Oh, I just overheard it.
Tell him about the present, Abner.
He's going to bring her a present when the carnival gets here. Just a minute. He wants to know what the present is, Lon.
Oh, I don't know. Tell him anything. Pair of pink bedroom slippers or anything.
A pair of pink bedroom slippers. Yeah, and he said that he would... Hello? Oh, you must have hung up.
Now, good. That's a good sign, Abner. He's sure enough mad now.
Well, you don't think we got him too mad, do you?
I don't think so. We need something strong like this to get him stirred up.
Yeah.
It looks like I'm going to be a big boxing promoter yet. I better be getting him one of them big bathrobes.
Bathrobe?
Yeah, that's what the big champion boxers wears whenever they climb into the boxing ring. Seen some pictures of them watching the moving pictures.
Oh.
They had their name sewed right across the back of the robe. Looks awfully important.
Well, you ain't going to be one of them boxing fighters, Lum.
No, but I figure the manager ought to have a bathrobe due.
Oh.
That'll be everybody will know who I am.
See? Sure.
I have Lum Eddard's manager and head promoter sewed right across the back of mine.
Good for you.
That ought to make a few eyes bug out whenever I walk into Madison Square Garden with that thing on.
Yeah. Madison's garden.
Well, sure. You don't think I'm going to stop with this little carnival fight with Iron Ike here in Pine Ridge, do you? No, sir. That's just a beginning. Iron Ike's just a stepping stone for us. I'm going to promote Mousy right up to the World Championship.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do over there in Madison's garden?
Well, I'm going to make $1,000,000. That's what I'm going to do.
Not on the wages old Buford pays you, won't.
Old Buford?
Yeah, ain't that who you're talking about, old Buford Madison? He's the only Madison around here I know of. It's got a garden.
For goodness sake, I said Madison Square Garden.
Well, I don't know what shape it is. All I know, ain't a very big garden. And old Buford won't pay nobody over 15 cents an hour to work in it. Ask Cedric, he worked over there for a while last summer. Old Buford make him work awful fast, Lum. I don't believe you could keep up.
I ain't aiming on keeping up with nobody at Buford's place.
Well, he'll fire you then. Fact is, I doubt if he'll even hire you in the first place, going over in a bathrobe.
I weren't talking about Buford's garden.
You said you're going to walk in there wearing a bathrobe with your name sewed across the back. Doggy's old Buford's going to think you're a little catch, Lum. Fact is, I do, too.
Listen, Abner, the Madison Square Garden I'm talking about is in New York City.
New York City?
Yes, sir. Right in the middle of it. A great big place.
Oh, well, that's different. Yeah, they're more like to pay higher wages for garden work there than old Buford does.
Abner, this is a place where they have a lot of big fights.
Big fights? Oh, well, them garden workers ought to learn to get along with one another better. They won't make no money if they're going to fight all the time. Maybe you oughtn't to go there long. That might be a dangerous place.
You got the wrong idea, Abner. In the kind of garden I'm talking about, they don't grow nothing.
They don't?
Of course not.
Well, I know you oughtn't to go then. You never would make no money in a garden like that. Have they tried irrigating?
For goodness sake. Madison Square Garden is a great big building in New York where they hold boxing fights and basketball games and six-day bicycle racing and all such as that.
They do?
Why, sure.
Well, no wonder they can't grow nothing. Them bicycles run around all over everything. Now, if they'll keep them bicycles out of there and put some fences and cut out that fighting and stuff.
It ain't a garden, it's a building.
You said it was
I know, but that's just what it's called. Wait a minute. I believe that's our ring.
I still think they water it good and keep them bicycles off.
Hello, jot them down, store, library, and bakery, lum editors, box promoter, and manager speaking.
Don't have to go there to start no fighting garden.
Oh, hello, Gussie.
Over to Elizabeth's garden.
No, Mouse, he ain't here.
Start riding bicycles scuffling.
You mean he's coming down to the store?
He'll whip him and Mousie both.
He did, huh?
Oh, makes her awful mad.
Uh-huh.
Where she staked them beans up.
You well, know. I do know.
Scuffle roll over.
Well, thank you for the warning, Gussie.
Wouldn't do it.
All right. Goodbye. Abner, can you see Mousie coming down the street?
Mouse, no.
Well, he'll be here in a minute.
Uh-huh.
Gussie said he's heading over here and she's feared he's mad again.
That dog is mad. It must have worked, Lum.
Yeah, she said he got some kind of a phone call and then sat right down and wrote something on a piece of paper and then left.
Well.
Wouldn't tell her nothing about it. Acted awful mysterious, she said.
Oh, well, he's mad then. Maybe we oughtn't to have did this, Lum. You don't reckon he'll be so riled up you'll want to come over here and hit us, do you?
I hope not. That's what Gussie was warning me about.
Oh, my goodness.
Feared Mousie was mad at me again.
Oh, my. I wish now I had... Wait a minute. Ain't that him coming
yep,
yonder?
Yep. That's Mousie, all right. Granny's, he don't look mad.
No.
I wonder if he ever changes that expression on his face.
I don't know. I feel sort of scared, old Lum. Reckon we ought to hide and make out like we ain't here.
No, don't worry. Iron Ike's the one he's after.
Yes, huh?
Ain't no one thing makes Mousie madder than to have somebody give Gussie a present.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I tried it.
Yeah, you tried that. He hit you awfully. Mind out. Here he comes. Don't...
Well, howdy, Mousie. Come on in.
Hello, Lum. Abner.
What can we do for you today, Mousie?
Lum, do you know where you send a letter to Iron Ike? He's got to go right away.
Oh, Iron Ike, huh? Well, yeah, I reckon we could take care of that for you, Mousie. You ain't mad, are you?
Well, I will be if that letter isn't sent right away before Iron Ike comes to Pine Ridge. I may lose my temper if it misses him.
Oh, well, don't worry. We'll get it to him.
Well, I wish you would, Lum, before I go into another rage. Well, I'll appreciate it if you'll take care of that for me, Lum.
Yeah, we'll look after it for you. Don't you worry.
Well... Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mousie. Everything will be all right now. Don't you worry about it.
Doggish. There's a mad feller if ever I seen one.
Yeah, he's fit to be tied.
I'd give anything to know what he written that letter to Iron Ike.
Yeah, me too. It's got me a little worried, too.
Oh, my, no.
Look like he said to get it to Iron Ike before he gets here.
Yeah.
That means he more than likely is threatening Ike to stay out of town.
Just about
it. And if that happens, we won't have no box fight.
Oh, my goodness. Reckon we ought to just sort of peek in that letter, Lum.
Well, I don't like to tamper with other folks' mail.
Well, you're his manager. You ought to know what he's right.
Yeah. Just to play safe, I think we ought to.
Sure, we can seal it back up. He won't know the difference.
Don't
have strong Mousie wrote this. Oh, he was
might mad. Might get us in a batch of trouble.
Yeah. Get a fight started around.
Short
letter,
ain't it?
Huh? Yeah.
What does it say, Lon? You see, Dear Iron Ike, don't bring Gussie pink bedroom slippers.
Oh, he's mad, all right. Go on, Lon.
Bring her blue ones instead. That's her favorite color. Your friend, Mousie. Well, I'll be dead.
From the 1930s, there's Lum and Abner with The Boxing Promoter. In just a moment, it's Murder at Midnight with The Ace of Death from 1947 as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big band swings. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Murder at Midnight was a series produced by KFI Los Angeles and syndicated in 1946. It featured tales of the supernatural and macabre by radio's top writers and performers. The stories were wild tales of death and the uncanny. The show essentially tried to do what Inner Sanctum did so memorably on the networks. Charles Paul contributed the creepy organ music, the director was Anton M. Leder, and that sinister voice narrator was none other than Raymond Morgan, a former Long Island minister who had given up the cloth for the excitement of radio. Here now, from January of 1947, is Murder at Midnight with The Ace of Death, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Murder at Midnight.
Your card, Mr. Thompson.
The King of Hearts.
Colonel Moore.
The Five of Clubs, Mr. President.
Count Rizzini. Come, Count, we are waiting. What is your card?
L'Asso di Spada.
I beg your pardon.
The Ace of Death.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Ace of Death. Now, Murder at Midnight, tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story, based on Robert Louis Stevenson's immortal Suicide Club, is by Max Ehrlich. Its title, The Ace of Death.
I stood there on the bridge and stared down into the swirling fog. It hid the river like a white shroud. I shivered. It'd be cold down there, freezing cold. I would go down, down, deep into the black, watery depths, my ears bursting and my lungs fighting for breath. And then, finally, there would be silence. Silence. And eternal peace. Somewhere, a clock began to chime 11. The last hour of a man's life. My life. I, John Evans, ill and broke without family or friends, sick and weary of the constant struggle among earthbound mortals, looked forward to my new future. Death. I put one foot over the bridge rail. My heart pounded. My head throbbed. And then someone came out of the mist and seized me from behind.
No, you fool. Don't do it. Not this way.
Let me go. Let me go
now,
while I still got the courage.
Did you hear what I've got to say?
Why did you stop me? Why? I wanted to die. I wanted to.
I sympathize with you, young man. You see, I too am tired of life and seek death.
You? You want to die?
Yes, but not by drowning. No, my boy. I've made other arrangements. The river is not only a dull way to die, it's positively sordid. The very idea makes me shudder with distaste.
Wait, I don't understand.
Oh, it's very simple, young man. Now, most of us are too commonplace about the hereafter. We enter it with morbid fear and without imagination. Actually, death can be glorious.
Glorious?
Yes, a great new change from our ordinary lifetime routine. A journey into an uncharted world. A man should meet death on the wings of adventure. It should be an exciting and delightful experience.
Death? Exciting and delightful?
Why not? I've already arranged my decease along these lines. And since you and I have an interest in common, why not join me?
Huh?
We'll seek death's private door together. Come, young man. Come along with me.
Where?
To my club. I'll be glad to recommend you for membership.
Your club?
Yes. It caters to a clientele of gentlemen like ourselves. We call it the Hereafter Club.
The whole thing was mad, insane. And yet it was intriguing, too. I looked hard at the elderly gentleman who'd come out of the fog to pull me from the brink of death, only to offer me a pleasanter and more delightful variety later. He repeated his invitation to join him, and I could see that he was perfectly sincere. I decided to go with him, even though I secretly considered him some kind of a madman. After all, what could I lose now? We took a cab and stopped at a grim-looking building in the Silk Stocking District on the east side. My elderly friend, whom I now knew as Frederick Whitney, took me into a luxurious reception room and asked me to wait there until he saw the president of the club. Finally, the president himself came out to greet me. He was a man of about 50 with a bald spot on his head, piercing gray eyes and a thin mouth. He smiled and extended his hand to me.
Welcome to the Hereafter Club, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Whitney has recommended you very highly, and I'm delighted to count you among our members.
I am pretty vague as to what all this is about, but Mr. Whitney mentioned something about a $400 initiation fee, and, well, I'm
My boy, Mr. Whitney knew you were in delicate financial straits and took your initiation fee upon himself.
Oh.
You were fortunate indeed, Mr. Evans, that he happened along and rescued you from the river. Such a morbid way of entering the hereafter would have been tragic indeed.
Isn't death in any form tragic?
By no means, Mr. Evans. Death can be a triumph, a fine, heady wine, when so designed by a connoisseur. Come, Mr. Evans, follow me. You are about to embark on an exciting and unforgettable experience.
Like a man in a dream, I followed the president into a large room. There was a green baize table in the center of it, and several men in evening dress lounged around the room drinking champagne. They seemed nervous and distraught, and when they laughed, it was high-pitched and too loud. They seemed to be waiting for something to happen, some event to begin. As the president and I stood at the door, he turned to me and smiled.
These men, Mr. Evans, are charter members of the Hereafter Club. They come from all walks of life, but they have one common desire, death.
I see. And what happens now?
Our procedure is very simple. We all play a game of cards.
A game of cards?
A simple but fascinating game of cards. That is, these gentlemen play. As president of the Hereafter Club, I am the dealer.
And what is the game?
Each man draws a card and turns it face up. The man who is fortunate enough to draw the ace of spades dies. For this is the card of death.
And how does he die?
By the hand of the man who draws the ace of clubs.
Oh, I see. The ace of clubs eliminates the ace of spades.
Precisely.
How many of these games do you play a night?
Just one. But as you can see, Mr. Evans, during its course, a man can live a lifetime of adventure. For this makes of death an exciting game of chance, a game to whip the blood and make the pulses race. You see, one never knows whether he will draw the fatal ace of spades tonight, or whether he will survive for weeks or even months.
A question, Mr. President.
Yes?
How much of this can a man stand?
I can only answer in this way, Mr. Evans. Our members always come back to the Hereafter Club night after night until they draw the ace of spades. Once a devotee of the game, it's impossible to resist. Now, but come, we're ready to begin.
In a kind of hypnotic trance, I followed the president into the room. For when the members saw him, their conversation stopped suddenly. They put down their champagne glasses, straightened. Their faces grew pale and tense, their eyes brilliant with a mixture of fear and anticipation. The president took a fresh pack of cards from his pocket, and like a magnet attracting iron filings, the men drew close to the baize-covered table. I found myself standing next to Frederick Whitney as the president spoke.
Gentlemen of the Hereafter Club, the game is about to begin. Someone here tonight will draw the ace of spades. Whoever he is, let me assure him that we will arrange his death so that it will appear to be an accident with no breath of scandal and with no unnecessary anguish to his family. We all know that life is only a stage to play the fool upon, as long as the part amuses us. Now we have wearied of our daily performance and have chosen a civilized and exciting way to quit that stage. Gentlemen, the deal.
It was a fantastic, weird, monstrous experience. The green baize table, the president puffing on his cigar and dealing a card to each man face down, each man his face like a graven image turning his card up. I could feel the sweat pouring down my forehead. My heart pounded like a hammer, and next to me, Frederick Whitney stood rigid, his eyes shining as the president's voice droned on.
Mr. Thompson, your card.
They're here. The three of diamonds.
Colonel Moore.
The six of hearts.
Mr. Denison.
It's the jack of spades.
Count Rizzini.
The eight of clubs.
Mr. Evans, our new member.
The queen of hearts.
Mr. Whitney. Mr. Whitney, what is your card?
The ace of clubs.
Well, Mr. Whitney, congratulations. You shall be the official agent for tonight. Now let us see whom you will guide into the hereafter.
Frederick Whitney left the game and went directly into the president's private office. There was only one card to be drawn now, the ace of death. The tension was almost unbearable. I felt like running away from that table, screaming at the top of my voice, but I didn't. I only stood there, riveted, staring at those cards, listening to the president's hypnotic voice.
Mr. Benedict.
The tray of spades.
Mr. Wallace.
Nine of diamonds.
Mr. Thompson.
The king of hearts.
Colonel Moore, your card.
The five of clubs.
Count Rizzini. Count Rizzini, we are waiting. What is your card?
L'asso di spada.
I beg your pardon.
The ace of death.
I stumbled from that horrible place into the cold night air. I went directly to my room, shaken to the core at what I had seen. In the cold, gray light of the morning, it took on the aspect of a bad dream, a macabre nightmare. I resolved to shrug it off, forget the whole thing. But when I bought a newspaper, the headline struck me like the blow of a hammer. Quickly, my heart beating wildly, I read the lead paragraph. Count Pietro Rizzini, prominent Italian nobleman, was hit and instantly killed at midnight when he stepped off the curb into the path of a speeding taxicab. The count, who had recently lost his fortune, was with a friend, Mr. Frederick Whitney, when the unfortunate accident occurred.
And so, in the darkness of the night, a man who has played a grim game and lost goes to his death as the clock strikes 12 for
Murder at Midnight.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now here is John Evans again to continue his story.
Yes, the Hereafter Club was really a murder club. A a racket conceived and created by the polished gentleman who called himself the president. He made a game of death and grew rich on it. For each night, although he lost a member, he made $400, the member's initiation fee. And as the members dropped out, according to Hoyle, there were always plenty of disillusioned neophytes like myself ready to replace them. My first impulse after reading that grisly newspaper announcement was to run to the police. But I had pledged my word to secrecy. And besides, I wanted to go back. I had to go back. The thrill of the game was in my blood. I fought to resist it, but it was like a hypnotic drug. Time after time, I went back to the Green Bay's table, and then, one night...
Your card, Mr. Whitney? Come, sir, what is your card?
The Ace of Spades.
Now, my friend, Frederick Whitney, the man who'd introduced me into the Hereafter Club, had drawn the Ace of Death. His string had run out. He was through. I stared at him. He was calm. And there was a half smile on his face. He seemed almost glad that for him the game was over. The president kept on dealing.
Mr. Thompson, your card?
The Jack of Hearts.
Colonel Moore?
The Four of Spades.
Mr. Denison?
The Ace of Diamonds.
Mr. Benedict?
Ten of Clubs.
Mr. Evans?
They were waiting for me.
Come, Mr. Evans. Your card?
The Ace of Clubs.
Congratulations, Mr. Evans. Only your sixth evening at our club, and you draw a winning card. Now, if you'll join Mr. Whitney and myself in my private office, we'll arrange the details.
The instructions were simple. I was to drive Mr. Whitney into the garage of his home, leave him in the car with the motor running. That was all. And so without a word, I got behind the wheel and drove my elderly benefactor to the appointed place. We looked at each other there in the garage, and then he said...
John, if anyone had to draw the Ace of Clubs, I'm glad it was you.
No, Mr. Whitney, look here. I don't want to kill you. You know I don't. Let's end this farce. Let's go to the police and end this monstrous thing.
No, John. You forget I'm a murderer. I have already killed... I'd rather die by carbon monoxide gas in this comparatively painless way than in the electric chair.
But the police will never know that you were responsible for Rossini's death.
If we expose the Hereafter Club, the president would be sure to tell him.
There must be a way, somehow.
No, my boy. I have chosen death. My time has come. In a way, I'm glad. Everything is resolved. There is no more waiting for the fatal card. It's over now. Go, my boy. Leave the garage. Slam the door.
No, Mr. Whitney. For God's sake, turn off the motor before...
Go, John, before it's too late. Hurry. Don't worry about me. I have sought death for weeks. Now I welcome it. Meet it gladly.
I staggered to the garage door, went out, and slammed it shut. I heard the motor still going. 5 minutes... 10 minutes. I knew that it was the end now for Frederick Whitney. I looked at my luminescent watch. It was just midnight. I walked the streets for hours after that. Now I was a murderer. True, I had killed with my victim's consent, but I had killed. Now, as the dawn came, I began to shake with a cold rage against the connoisseur of death who called himself the president. Men killed. Men died, and he profited without risk. He always dealt the game and never participated. He was a prince of ruin, and unfortunate men like myself could not resist what he had to offer. And so, like a smiling Satan in formal clothes, exerting a demoniac spell upon the fools who played his game, he watched them destroy each other. That night, I went to the Hereafter Club, and just before the game confronted him.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Evans. I see you are back again tonight.
Yes, Mr. President, I'm back again. And I want to congratulate you.
Indeed? On what?
On your financial vision in starting this club. By simple mathematics, it nets you a handsome profit. We play 5 evenings a week, and each evening you make $400. That, Mr. President, adds up to $2,000 a week.
Yes, it's a tidy sum, Mr. Evans, to be sure. But to tell you the truth, tonight we play our last game.
Our last game?
Yes, to be frank with you, Mr. Evans, the sport of the game is beginning to pall on me. I've decided to retire to the country and pursue the delights of horticulture. Flowers are my hobby, you know.
Oh, I see. Even you can tire of sending men to their deaths.
And just what do you mean by that, Mr. Evans?
I mean that you are a coward, Mr. President. You have created a monstrous game, and yet you haven't the courage to play it yourself.
You question my courage then, Mr. Evans.
I do, and I question your honor, too. It seems to me that if you profit by your clients, you should take the same risk they do.
You are a very impertinent young man, but I cannot let your accusations go without rebuttal. Indeed, it might be an interesting experience to play this last game myself. A kind of fitting climax to a successful career. Of course, Mr. Evans, I'll demand a handsome apology when it's over.
You don't mean that you are actually going to take a chance?
Yes, why not? I've often been intrigued by the excitement of my clients. Now, I might as well savor that excitement myself. Before I close the Hereafter Club.
That the president was going to play created a sensation among the members. He dealt a round, and then another. And the third time around, for the second night in a row, I drew the murder card, the ace of clubs. The president smiled his congratulations at what he called my phenomenal luck and continued.
Mr. Thompson, your card?
The two spades.
Colonel Moore?
The king of hearts.
Mr. Dennison?
The... seven of clubs.
Mr. Benedict?
Queen of diamonds.
And now, gentlemen, I'll turn over my own card.
Congratulations, Mr. President. You have drawn the ace of spades. The president's face was immobile. Not an eyelash flickered. We went into his private office, and his words were calm as he explained the evening's arrangements. I had drawn the murder card and he had drawn the death card. Yet, judging by his unworried attitude and serene bearing, it might have been the other way around. I couldn't help a flicker of admiration for him. As for me, I was eager to do my part, to kill this man who had been caught at the last moment in his own net. He had sent many a man to his death, and now he had to meet it himself.
There is a railroad bridge on the outskirts of town, Mr. Evans. It has a low railing, and below it an express train passes exactly at midnight. You will push me over that rail into the path of the locomotive. And now, if you're ready, let us go.
We didn't speak on the trip out to the bridge. It was a cold night. We stood there, shivering. And waiting. Finally, in the distance, that was it. The midnight train. I could see its bright headlight flickering as it approached. Then the president spoke.
Mr. Evans, of course we are not going through with this.
Of course we are, Mr. President.
Look here, my dear boy. As you know, the Hereafter Club is disbanded. Unlike my clients, I have no desire to die. There's no point in doing so.
Well, you are going to die, Mr. President, just as you have sent others. I'll see to it myself.
Be reasonable, Mr. Evans. I have everything to live for, and so can you have. Now then, I'm a very wealthy man, and I'm quite sure you could use, say, $10,000.
Get close to that rail, Mr. President.
I suggest you listen to reason, Mr. Evans.
The others died without a whimper. You sent them into the hereafter, and now you're going yourself as you deserve.
You're a very stubborn young man, Mr. Evans.
No, drop that gun. Don't. Try to kill me, will you? Don't. Well, you got me in the arm, that's all. And now you're going over that rail.
Don't. I'll give you anything. Anything.
Over you?
No. No.
No. When the train had passed, I saw what was left of his body on the tracks. Slowly, with dragging footsteps, I walked down the street toward the twin green lights of the police station. Now, like the others, I'm ready for the end.
The doors of the police station open and close on the man who trumped the ace of death. The man who now seeks his own dark destiny as the clocks strike 12 for
murder at midnight. Remember to be with us again when death deals his final hand and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight. The part of John Evans was played by Carl Swenson. The president of the Hereafter Club was John Griggs. With music by Bert Berman, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leader.
From January of 1947, there's The Ace of Death from Murder at Midnight. In a moment, a rare recording of the World Adventurers Club and The Living Mummy as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Thank you, Dave, and welcome back to the program. Next up, it's the World Adventurers Club from 1932. This short-lived program was a mixture of mystery, adventure, and intrigue, sort of a cross between Ripley's Believe It or Not meets Unsolved Mysteries. Here now, from 1932, is the World Adventurers Club with The Living Mummy, another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Adventurers Club greet you once again. As you may know, this unique organization is composed solely of brave, intrepid adventurers and explorers. Only those who have passed through some thrilling or blood-curdling experience may qualify for membership. Ladies and gentlemen, the World Adventurers Club.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen, the meeting will come to order.
What's on the carpet for tonight, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, something unusual, I can promise you. Allow me to present the guest of the evening, Mr. Arnold Manning.
How do you do, Mr. Manning?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Mr. Manning, Have you that little story prepared for us?
I believe so.
Very well, then. Proceed.
Yes, sir.
It so happened that a few years ago I was in Arabia in search of the tomb of an Egyptian king, Ptolemy Ray by name. After many weary weeks of searching in the terrific heat of the desert, my native boy and I stumbled upon the hidden tomb near a grove of fantastic and gnarled fig trees. But imagine our surprise to find a band of fierce Arabs with their campfires gathered near the grove. I heard the beat of their drums and knew what they meant. They were driving away the evil spirits.
Oh, it is Mustafa Bey. It is better we go away and return later.
Why?
Well, Mustafa, he very bad man. He rob and steal.
Nonsense. I'll go speak to him. Wait here.
You are Mustafa Bey? May I ask what you are doing here?
You question me, Monsieur Manning? It is I who should question you.
You know me, then?
I have been watching you. So, you have found the hidden tomb?
Yes, after much hard work.
Excellent.
Why do you laugh?
It is that the joke seems to be on you, monsieur. If you will proceed to the tomb, you will observe that someone has been ahead of you.
What?
Come, I will show you.
Why, the stone door is moved back. The tomb is open. You did this?
I? No, Monsieur Manning. I would not enter that tomb for all the money in the world. But I am interested in what you will find within that tomb. I and my men will wait outside.
Do not enter, sir. Come, we go quick.
No. But I am wondering what's inside that interests Mustafa. Hand me that flashlight. I'm going in.
Oh, please, sir. The evil spirit.
You'll go with me, Moreau. This Mustafa can do us no harm. We're not far from the village.
But I am afraid, sir.
Don't be silly. Come on. It certainly is dark in here. Pick up your feet, Moreau. I'll flash this light about. What was that?
The door. Oh, the stone door. Oh, Mustafa has closed it. See, we are shut in. We are buried alive. Oh, preserve us.
Mustafa.
Open up. Open up, I say. Mustafa Bey, I'll kill you for this. It's no use. The stone door is in place. As if you were right, Moreau. We are buried alive.
You have found Ptolemy's tomb, my friend. Oh, my man, the camels. We go.
We are as good as dead, sir. Oh, I warn you.
Yes, it looks like curtains for us, Moreau. Strange. How that stone was moved back, and Mustafa being here. I'll bet he opened it with the intention of locking us in to die.
Oh, no, no, sir. Mustafa afraid of evil spirit. He did not do it.
Well, I may as well look round. There is the sarcophagus of Ptolemy Ray. Isn't it beautiful? Smell the musk and spices. And the dust. Oh.
It is getting warm. Oh, we will soon stop breathing.
Yes. The oxygen will soon be exhausted.
Look. Look, sir. See? The cover. It is moving.
Good heavens. It came from that sarcophagus. By Jove, that cover is moving. Well, I'm going to see what's inside.
Oh, no, no!
Listen, there are no evil spirits.
When the top of a mummy case moves, there is something physically alive in there. It may be a rat, but I'm going to see.
You brave man, son. I keep close, even to death.
That's the idea, Moro. Well, here goes. I'll pull it off.
Oh, it's alive! The mummy is alive! Oh, Allah! Allah!
So it is. A living mummy. But this mummy is a beautiful girl. She's rousing. She's sitting up. Her eyes are open.
Please. Oh, please do not hurt me, monsieur.
A French girl. Who are you? What are you doing in the sarcophagus? And where is the mummy?
Mummy? Oh, I found no mummy. When I escaped from Mustafa Bey while he was camping here, I saw the door of this tomb open and I ran in. I was afraid he might enter to search for me. And so I climbed in here and pulled the cover over me.
You say you escaped from Mustafa Bey? Why?
He captured me from my uncle's caravan. Oh, I dread the fate I knew was ahead of me. And I would rather die in here than... Oh, I must think.
Yes, I see. But I still can't fathom how that stone door came to be opened.
It's getting hot. I am stifling. Can we not leave here?
What's your name?
Sonia.
I'm sorry, Sonia. Mustafa Bey has closed the door, and we are buried alive. Oh, we must be brave.
We are to die in this tomb. I do not want to die. I do not want to die.
There, there. We must be brave.
Oh, Master, if I may hold your hand. And I do. It will help me to wait for death.
I'll prop this flashlight so the light won't leave us.
Look, Master, that shadow on the wall. It is moving.
Wait, while I turn this light. By Jove, it is moving. Looks like a huge human form.
It's an evil spirit. I shoot.
Stop. Give me that gun. Whatever it is moving toward the stone door. Yes, it's climbing down.
Monsieur, if it is alive, it must breathe. It must know how to get out.
You're right, Sonia. There it is. It's pushing against the door. It's an ape. A huge ape.
An ape. Yes, it is. It is the sacred ape.
Shh, quiet. He's searching for a certain stone. He seems to be weak. Guess it's hard for him to breathe in here. Hurry. Hurry, old man, or we won't last to enjoy our freedom. Hurry. Hurry.
Oh, he's found it. He's moving it. The stone door is moving. We're free. The door is open, and he's gone. Oh,
breathe that wonderful air, Moro. Can you get out? Sonia has fainted.
Yes, Master. I am all right.
Come, then. Let's get out of here as fast as we can. Oh, the sun again. The beautiful sun, Sonia. Sonia, we are free.
The sun. Oh, we are safe. He does not come back.
He's gone. For good, I hope. Look, the ape is swinging joyously from tree to tree in the grove.
Monsieur, you have saved my life. I am grateful.
Thank the ape. Much obliged, old fellow. May you live to a ripe old age.
Well.
That's quite a yarn. I was almost suffocating while you were telling the story, Mr. Manning.
The weirdest yarn I ever heard. But what became of Sonia, the living mummy?
Yeah. How would you have it in, Mr. Chairman?
Why, I'd have you marry the girl. They always do.
And that's just what I did.
And now will you believe that a mummy can come to life? Well, listen again and be thrilled by another strange adventure in a strange land.
From 1932, there's the World Adventurers Club with The Living Mummy. Well, that's all we have time for today. Tune in again next week, and why not invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. So till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do.
This program came to you from Hollywood.